Anyway, this is the maiden voyage, as I've said, of the Fab Machine. Many thanks to Fab for providing it. I've been building and tinkering and loading and data transferring for what feels like about 3 weeks now, and finally got everything in line. Now there may be some tweaking and tinkering going on, twinkering and teaking, too, entirely possibly. And with everything else, the audio should get markedly better. I hope to get hold of John Fox at some point and get his expert sound engineering perspective. The funny thing is, there's no reason that this should sound different now. Yeah, oh well, we'll worry about it later. I should note that this is a listener-supported program. We have managed to stay on the air in excess, well in excess of a decade now, through kind listener contributions. As you know, other programs have fallen by the wayside, and look, it's listener contributions. And I should note that none of those listeners who contribute include Russian oligarch pals of Vladimir Putin or skeevy, sketchy Russian websites that have promoted stories like Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump. Nope, it's just us, just y'all. So we try to raise $200 every evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a quarter, 32 at, 12.50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13. We'll take that half a penny and round it up and put it in the, Agnes's home. We'll put it in the tip jar for her masseur. Okay? Yeah. But we, and for those of you who prefer that, you know, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. It's under the tab Contribute. If you'd like to become a monthly set it and forget it contributor, a subscriber, as it were, it's really easy. Just click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and then put in whatever number you wish. Anything, $5 on up. We're looking for 100. $410 a month contributors, and this is the time of the month when it gets really, really, really thin. I worked it out. We need 13 $10 a month contributors per day throughout a regular month because, you know, weekend days fall on different dates. It's funny, calendars that way. But if you don't want to do that, just put a number in. Or if you prefer the United States Postal Service, Boss Man Wayne is always tickled when he goes to the mailbox and he doesn't have to wear the spider-proof gloves and fend off Shelob in the mailbox at the same time that he's fighting off the Grand Kleagle around the corner. That mailing address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. So hopefully that will that'll be taken care of because I've got about $1,000 worth of bills to deal with for the Horn here at the end of the month. And the month ends on Friday, and we are headed downhill toward nudging the Norsky and licking the Lithuanian. So, you know, fingers crossed. Now, where do we... Where do we begin on this here Moran Monday? The Moran Monday music is really, really crummy too. I've got to go in and do and mess with the sound card settings. I'm almost sure that the sample rate is screwed up or something like this. I'm sure I did something wrong. But you know, damn it, Jim. I'm a broadcaster, not an engineer. I didn't join this man's internet radio to be crawling around under desks trying to figure out which wire goes where. It just sort of happened by dint of necessity. Okay, then. 13 minutes past the hour, and finally, we can actually get started on the program. Yeah, somewhere along the way, I pushed a button or did something that isn't quite right. But, oh well. We will figure it out as time goes by. Now, I'd like to start with an email, because this is, I love it when I get thought-provoking emails. This one in particular coming in from our buddy Tosh. Subject line: Scalise shooting. You know, we're not supposed to say that anything except, gosh almighty, political violence is so wrong in the new United States of America. Because, you know, that's true. But I remember when a whole bunch of judges were getting threatened, and it was Senator John Cornyn of Texas who said, "Now, I ain't saying that I'm a condoning the threatening of judges, but when you think about all the poor little fetuses that's getting killed every day, you can sort of understand why they'd have done it." Yeah. I don't remember if it was fetuses or what. But he said, you know, he could sure understand why you'd need to threaten a judge. Well, I'm not going to say that I necessarily understand why anybody'd need to shoot a Klan sympathizer who was a member of Congress. I don't understand that. Anyway, a note coming from Tosh. This shooting is the unavoidable consequence of the mean, nasty actions of the GOP. The potential pain and suffering that guy could anticipate with the end of the Affordable Care Act was the most probable motivation for this shooting. That he'd support Bernie makes complete sense given Bernie's position on health insurance. I know I'd be right cranky if I was stripped from my medicines, and I'm otherwise in pretty decent shape. You're probably right about the 2020 presidential election, since it'll take longer than 4 years for the consequences of GOP policies to take full effect. When they do, do you finally think the folks will figure who their enemies are, or will they again blame their potential allies with the media to fear it'll be allies, so we've got work to do? And, you know, Tosh makes a good point there, because all of that, let's see here, maybe this works. Economic anxiety that voters experienced on November 8th, 2016, that sent them running to the polls to work out their white lash put the Pumpkin King into office. Well, all that economic anxiety was a result of policies that were enacted in the 8 years of the Reign of Error, you know, under Dim Leader, and which for 8 years, that one in our White House, tried to mitigate. Mm-hmm, yeah. So it's hard to, so the same thing will take place. The 4 years that we are in the midst of experiencing and aren't even 6 months into, that's kind of a time check. We're not even into month six. We haven't reached the 6 month mark of the Trump regime yet. So that's sort of a perspective thing. Those chickens are going to be coming home to roost for quite some time. Tosh continues, the absence of income capping marginal tax rates means that the U.S. economy is attempting to muddle through in a dehydrated condition. The elites are empowered to rape the entities they are responsible for so they can sock the money away to be richer. Without the vital flowing money, people lose jobs, hope, and dignity. At the U.S. federal level, the economy is nothing like a family budget or even a business. It is most accurately modeled as the circulatory system of a mammal. Money flowing through the system touches many people, all of whom can spend or save as needed. Well, they can, not necessarily as needed, but as able, to meet their needs, wants, and desires. Austerity breaks this cycle. Those marginal tax rates that only affects people making $500K and up incentivize leaving funds in the economy, company coffers, etc., where then they would be invested in new ventures, so these companies would remain capable of paying nice retirements to former executives and others. Alternatively, these folks would chase tax shelters, which also need people working and spending money. Most of the wasteful spending, whether military or otherwise, is someone's paycheck or their retirement. We need to consider this, but the for-profit media have no motivation to follow this thread. I recall that the nobles' rights, privileges, and mindset that start from the broken French peasant revolution in Barbara Tuchman's book come around in full violent flowers, the French Revolution of 1789 and the Reign of Terror. I support liberal policies for three reasons. One, they are more efficient from 1933 to 1978. The average GNP growth rate was 4.6% with no crashes for the longest period in U.S. history. Second, these policies are a far better implementation of the teachings, dictates of both Jesus Christ and Jehovah God. Third, we avoid the creation of masses of angry, desperate people. This is where the Scalise shooting comes in. Cheers, Tosh. Not a lot to add there. Tosh has pretty well nailed it. So, that sort of gets the ball rolling this evening. Okay, thank you, thank you, David. Bob, music is bad, but your voice is loud and clear on HeadOn.Live. Thank you. I presume we're also working well on White Rose Society. Steve in New York tells me tune in sounds too quiet here. Levels are a little bit... Yeah, well it's going to take some tweaking for a day or so. Keith says the intro was muffled but cleared after you started talking loud and clear now. Thank you. Slowly but surely, we'll make sense of all of this. Maybe even the world in which we live. Who freaking knows? And come to think of it, I also do suspect that the funny thing is, I don't know how... Okay, so the cats walk across buttons and stuff. I get that. How did they change the threshold setting on the compression? That's a knob. Are my cats working on thumbs? You know, that is the next big evolutionary feline step, cats. Oh, thank you to Sylvia. Sylvia with some tomato porn. And I say that in a good way. Tomatoes, wow, that vine is just bushed out and beautiful. One of my favorites, Bella Rosa, a big solid red tomato, few seeds, lots of flesh. The yellow one is Jubilee. You might be interested in Appalachian Heritage Seed Farm in Winchester, Ohio. I read about them in Seed Savers Exchange publication. Well, if everything plays out as I hope it will, I will be the proud owner of a garden tiller by, say, April of next year. And then I might not, well, and probably long about February, if that's going to be the case, I will need to start thinking about things like good heirloom tomato seeds. So I can put out like 125 or so, and the deer can come and eat them. Because that's what happens. But it's still fun. Let's see. Old radio hand Scott and Punky the Cockatiel riding Gain says, you sound fine, but the Fab Machine sounds like there's not a firmly seated plug from it to the soundboard or other device that eventually sends the music out to the known universe. The opening music also sounded a bit like a radio signal that wasn't quite tuned in correctly, fuzzy, slightly off-channel. Scott in San Diego. Yeah. None of those things have changed. No, no, like I said, I have a feeling there's a sample rate issue going on here. Which is just weird, because it shouldn't be. It was a very busy weekend. I was hell bent on getting the Fab Machine into line here, and a lot of heaving, a lot of lifting, a lot of moving, some sweating and some swearing. And by the time I was done, I had amassed it, because over the course of years, you know, you change things out, you plug this in, you unplug that. And you just wind up with stuff that isn't plugged into anything anymore. And so I wound up with this pile of wires that I came to refer to as Bob's Home for Wayward Cables. And of course, the wayward cables that I most needed, none of them were. So I was off to beautiful Beckley early this morning to get the last of the needed cables. And yeah, I know. So what? But damn, this thing is fast. Oh, by the way, Scott notes, P.S., congratulations to Donald Trump on his recent nomination to receive the Luca Brasi Articulation and Elocution Award. A couple of different things went down during the course of the day. Not the least of which are the things that took place in the Supreme Court. They had rather of a busy little day today. Supremes did. Deciding who to screw and how to screw them. As you can well imagine, with that new paragon of moderation, Neil Gorsuch on hand, the who got screwed part let's put it this way. The Constitution's who got screwed. Do you remember a couple of months back we talked about the fact that one of the first cases Neil Gorsuch would be able to participate in deciding had to do with, and boy, this is a complex issue too, had to do with whether a preschool in Missouri that was run by a church could participate in a state program that provided monies to rubberize the playground surfaces so little Timmy and little Cindy wouldn't bark their little kneecaps out a-playing on the jungle gym. What was at issue was the fact that back eons ago, the state of Missouri passed a constitutional provision that said, no, if you're a church, you don't get any government monies. And this was a state of Missouri government-funded program, so they said no to the Lutherans who wanted to have the taxpayers pay for their religiously funded, their private kindergarten or the playground surface thereof. This was the last day of the Supreme Court term, and they were in a, sure enough, drop-dead hurry to get the hell out. But it turns out that Neil Gorsuch, he stood for religious liberty. Yeah. In a 6-2 decision, that's uninspiring. In a 6-2 decision, the justices decided that, yes, the precious little pumpkins there at the private Lutheran daycare, preschool, kindergarten, what have you, could have their money so that they too could have a playground surface made out of excess recycled shredded tires. Because freedom. This is not a good thing. But for the moment, the Supremes did say that this was, old balls and strikes John Roberts included some language in the opinion that said, the decision involves express discrimination based on religious identity with respect to playground resurfacing. We do not address religious uses of funding or other forms of discrimination. Ooh, discrimination. Huh. No, Elena Kagan joined in the majority. That's not inspiring. Chief Justice Roberts, old balls and strikes, wrote for the majority. He said, among other things, the exclusion of Trinity Lutheran from a public benefit for which it is otherwise qualified solely because it is a church is odious to our Constitution all the same and cannot stand. Well, now. How's about that? That's particularly interesting when you take into account the fact that this was all based upon a statute designed specifically to make sure that church and state remained separate. Because, you know, if the church can take money from the state, well, gosh, what's to keep the state from taking money from the church? Right? You ever think about it that way? Well, Robert says we're not going to do that. No. John Roberts says we're not going to get into any of those issues. This is just about precious little pumpkins not scraping their knees on the pavement or the gravel or the red dirt or whatever of the playground. That's all this is about. Sonia Sotomayor was not convinced. She went to the well, not extraordinary, but somewhat unusual step of reading her dissent from the bench. She was not... She was not impressed. And in point of fact, she went so far as to say, today's decision discounts centuries of history and jeopardizes the government's ability to remain secular. And she went on to use language that said that commitment to a secular government appears to be in jeopardy in the United States. Congratulations, Justice Sotomayor, for stating what for some of us has been more than obvious for quite some time. At least, you know, obvious to me. How many times have I sat here and said, listen, the First Amendment is nothing more now than a life support system for the religion industry? You have to understand that there is scarcely a Republican alive who would not jump for joy and cheer with manifest glee any statement that the United States is a Christian nation. That Christianity is the official, recognized religion of the United States of America. There was a little something that happened over the weekend, a break with history. Since the administration of Thomas Jefferson, which was a while back, you know, like, 200 years and more, there has been, Jefferson was the first to host a dinner at the White House to mark the end of Ramadan. The Obama administration did it. The Dim Leader administration did it. The Clinton administration did it. And backwards from, you know, that, right. Oh, but not the regime of the Tangerine Tiberius. Oh, no. No, for the first time in quite some long time, there was no commemorative feast to mark the end of the Ramadan fasting period. I'm sure there will, however, be, you know, a Christmas dinner, and I don't know. Is there a Yom Kippur meal to end the fast? I don't know. There will be other feasts of religions favored by the administration. Just not that one. So inspiring to see such freedom breaking out all over the place. Jesus. There was a degree of sadness this weekend here. I found out Saturday evening that we had lost another of the voices for Appalachian human rights. He was the Episcopal priest for many years here in this town and in other local churches, local Episcopal churches. I didn't know him as a priest per se, at least not a parish priest. I knew him because he had the courage to stand up against the coal industry here and declare truth in the face of power that mountaintop removal was toxic to both land and people. Father Roy Jean Crist died in the hospital Friday. And it had an effect on me. Because whenever you lose someone who has had a powerful and influential voice in demanding basic human rights, it leaves a void that's hard to replace, hard to fill. It was a lot of years ago when they were blasting up on top of the mountain here, or blasting away the top of the mountain here where I live, that Father Crist was part of the group that put together something called a Blessing of the Mountain. Now, this has nothing to do with what you believe or who you believe in or what you believe in. But a bunch of people gathered on the mountain and sang hymns, and Roy Jean delivered a homily. And smack dab in the middle of that, well, a whole bunch of coal friends of coal, wearing all matching T-shirts that said "Save the Endangered Coal Miner" or some such, came roaring down off the mountains. They'd been laying in wait. And one of them ran straight up to Roy Jean and began screaming in his face, telling him about how God didn't want him to take away his job, and he had to have a job to feed his feed his family and send his youngins to college and so forth. And in true minor fashion, because remember, it's only liberals that have to be told not to be violent. If, say, right-wingers are violent, well, you know, that's okay. Or at least that is to be expected. Yeah. And I mean, he screamed and screamed and talked about what his God was and it, blah, blah, blah. And Roy Jean just stood there and wouldn't let him run us off. And it's that's easier said than done. By a long shot. Well, he's gone. And he will be missed. And his departure was sudden and shocking. A day later, I got news of a different sort. Not a man in his early 70s, but a man in his late 30s. I'm not going to share a name in this instance. For reasons that I trust will become obvious. But I had gone over yesterday morning to pick up Agnes over at over where she was helping with the grandbabies and bring her back home. And as we drove home, I got a call from a good friend. And he said, "Brother, it is one shitty day." I said, "What?" And he said, and he told me who had died. And once again, it was someone else who has, dared to raise his voice in opposition to the wholesale destruction of Central Appalachia. And in this case, it wasn't a death that took place in a hospital. Rather, it was a death that took place in the ignominious surroundings of a little apartment, either late at night or early on Saturday or early on Sunday morning. And from all appearances was an overdose death. Or should I say, another overdose death on top of 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 another overdose death on and on and on and on and on. And as is the case, it so often the case, it got me to thinking. Because I had just seen in the last 48 hours yet another of the many stories that come out about the opioid epidemic in Appalachia, with West Virginia being ground zero for deaths by overdose. And frankly, within 24 hours of hearing the story of my friend's death, by Jiminy, there was another story about the opioid crisis and the opioid epidemic. And I hope y'all will understand when I say, especially people who are or have been associated with the journalism business, that I'm getting pretty well sick of Appalachian opioid crisis stories. And that may seem cold. It may even seem counterintuitive. But sick I am. Because you can't hardly open a newspaper or an online journal or turn on the TV news without some well-coiffed, in the case of TV, reporter earnestly reporting from some misbegotten corner of Appalachia about those poor people and their opioid crisis and the scourge of heroin and fentanyl and the availability of Narcan and how many and how often and who. The latest one I saw this morning. And it featured interviews of women in some county jail who were being locked up for their own good, so that maybe they might get clean in jail. And the earnest reporter looked at one young woman and said, "If anybody who knows you is watching this, sees this, is there anything you'd like to say to them?" Which even that sort of pissed me off. I don't know what he was hoping. Maybe he was hoping that she would fall to her knees and beg the forgiveness of Jesus Christ and swear she'd never do it again and catalog her many sins. And instead she just said, "I just want them to know I love them." You see, someone trapped in the throes of addiction doesn't lose the entirety of their essential humanity. They're simply addicted to a very, very powerful chemical. And it rewires the pleasure centers, the endorphin receptors, and so forth in their nervous system. But that notion, what grabbed me, that notion that now we are sending reporters out to favorably report on the notion, on the idea that, well, you know, what they need is locked up for their own good. They'll sober up in jail, and the minute that they get out of jail, it's not like they're going to run out and go looking for a fix, because they'll be all cured by jail. Kind of made me wonder how that got past a producer or an editor or an executive producer. Because it generally doesn't work that way. People who go through withdrawal in jail and get dope sick, you know, you can die being dope sick, by the way. And there's not any treatment taking place in jail. Not much in the way of support either. The woman being interviewed was merely laying forlornly on a cot in basically a prison ward. You know, no, oh, it's jail, Bob. It's not supposed to be nice. And this impression was created that, well, you know, she'll get out in a few days and then she'll be clean. No, she's going to, if she gets out, bonds out, whatever. They didn't, I don't recall them telling us what the charge she was in on was. But she's still going to have to face that charge because she's now part of the criminal justice, a term we use loosely, justice system. And it was straight up an ugly piece of business. And we're getting, I mean, just based on the reporting I'm reading and seeing and hearing, we're getting perilously close to the aw, fuck it stage. There was some mention in this particular report about how the heroin and the fentanyl comes from China to Mexico, where it is distributed by vicious Mexican drug cartels to the poor, unsuspecting people in America. Then I suppose some of that, I suppose that who am I to question what the distribution network is? But you know what? I'd say 99 times out of 100, what got people hooked, addicted, and led them down that primrose path to hell and heroin didn't come through China and was not distributed by a vicious, head-lopping Mexican cartel. It was distributed by good, patriotic, Merkin pharmaceutical companies who flooded this particular state, this state where I live, with enough opioids for every man, woman, and child in the entire state of West Virginia to have a stockpile of 400 pills. That's not every man, woman, and child who's sick. Not every man, woman, and child with a chronic pain condition. Not every man, woman, and child with an acute pain issue. Just every man, woman, and child. 400 pills. 400 pills for Bob. 400 pills for Agnes. 400 pills for my little granddaughter. 400 pills for each of my little grandsons. 400 pills for the little old blue-haired ladies down in the Baptist church. 400 pills for the first grade teacher, 400 pills for the high school principal. 400 pills for the deacons, 400 pills for the judges, 400 pills for the probation officers and the cops and the sheriff's deputies and the state troopers and the lawyers and the doctors and the nurses. 400 pills for every single human being in the state of West Virginia. And there was no inscrutable Chinese drug gang involved. There was no vicious Mexican drug lord involved. It was just the pharmaceutical companies and Wall Street. That's all. Just pharmaceutical companies, the middleman, wholesaler, suppliers, and Wall Street. And maybe, you know, a pill rolling doctor or 1,000. It's always difficult to talk about this issue because I am forever cognizant of the fact that there are people for whom these drugs are the difference between life and death. Between some sort of managed pain and a hell so intense as to make one contemplate suicide. That's real. But those people are not really large enough in number to make the dope trade wildly successful and really, really good for the day traders and coupon clippers on Wall Street. They're not good enough numbers for the teachers' retirement funds and police and fire retirement funds that invest their pensions in mutual funds that have these companies in them. No, to make them really wildly profitable, you need mass consumption. You remember, like Beldar used to say on the Coneheads sketches way back when Saturday Night Live was really brilliant, consume mass quantities. And state attorneys general looked the other way. Some didn't. We used to have here in West Virginia a magnificent man of morals and courage and intellect named Darryl McGraw. He had sat on the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, and then he became Attorney General. And when he became Attorney General, he saw the opioid crisis coming, and he filed lawsuits against the companies. And when, swept along by a tidal wave of teabag money and pack money and dark money, a skeevy grifter by the name of Patrick Morrissey showed up in West Virginia with oodles of money. Patrick Morrissey defeated Darryl McGraw and immediately set about ignoring the hell out of the opioid crisis. His wife, after all, was a lobbyist for one of the companies that the state of West Virginia was suing over the opioid crisis. you see how it works. But to return to my thesis, I'm about sick of opioid stories. Because I fear they provide just a little bit too much of "there but for the grace of God goes John Smith" for a nation that needs someone to look at and say, "Well, Muriel, at least we're not like those hillbillies and all hooked on the dope." Yes, I know, Emery. Hasn't God been good to us? Because it seems that the purpose, if we could say that it is the purpose of journalism, to inform the public and to help right public wrongs, has failed here. Because you're not going to criminalize away the opioid crisis. The opioid crisis is bad enough now that the only thing you can really do is treat. Oh, but here's the fun part. Treatment. We got no money for treatment. I mean, all you had to do was be tuned into the Sunday shows, and you could have heard Skeletor's daughter, Kellyanne Conway, declaring that, well, you know, if people lose their Medicaid, they can go out and get a job that has employer-provided health care. And that, no, these aren't really cuts to Medicaid in the Senate and House health care bills, even though they are. Or maybe Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek declaring that the Republican approach to health care, that's really nothing but a goddamn tax cut, will lead America back to personal responsibility. Hot diggity damn. That's what an addict needs. Some personal responsibility. They can just pull themselves up by their anarcho-capitalist Ayn Randian bootstraps and not be addicts anymore and go and live a healthy and productive life, except they can't. Because there's no jobs. As I've noted before, you have to pass a piss test in this state to get a job working at the Rippy Mart counting the cigarettes at the end of the night. And what is already a desperately bad problem in this state and others, where there is not sufficient treatment, there is nothing approaching sufficiency of treatment, there aren't enough inpatient beds, and even if you get into one, you can't stay there long enough usually to get clean. Well, this bad situation is only going to get worse. And lo and behold, there's Republican Senator Archmore in a bad wig, Shelley Moore Capito, who says, "I'm watching the situation and monitoring it." Jesus, lady. If they were just taking your constituents and throwing them in a sludge lake, would you monitor that situation too? Because it is that she's monitoring. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. "Hey, Bob, cold turkey in a for-profit prison. I can't imagine a harder way to kick. No treatment because it cuts into the profit margin. Remember Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is restarting the war on Negroes. I mean, drugs. Appalachia is just an afterthought." But those are throwaway people anyway, aren't they? They don't deserve our solicitude because they're they, aren't they? And if somebody is a they, that means they're an other. And if they're an other, at the very least, they're negligible and maybe even dangerous to the good people. I realize I'm probably in the wrong. I am in the wrong in saying no more opioid stories, but I'm really, really tired of seeing that scene from Galaxy Quest replay in my head every time I hear one of these, you know, with the alien captain saying, "Those poor people. And those poor hillbillies. You know, maybe they wouldn't be so bad off if they'd quit voting against their own interests." So yesterday, of course, there was a Bernie rally in Charleston, and there was one in Columbus. The one in Columbus drew thousands of people. I'm not so sure about the one in Charleston. All about saving our health care. Inspiring people to stand up for themselves. And I hope they do. I hope we do. But Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions III, firing up the war on, as Ron described it, Negroes, drugs, again. It's not going to change anything. It's not going to make anything any better. It's not going to improve anything. If we do not treat, if we do not help those who want to get clean, then we will never be shed of this. And the ODs will just pile up and pile up and pile up. And by the way, just a question. The DEA, of course, is charged with the duty of interdicting the fentanyl and the heroin that comes from the inscrutable Chinese drug lords through the vicious Mexican drug cartels up to the poor and unsuspecting people of the United States. If I was the DEA, and I'm not, and I'm glad, if I was the DEA, I think I'd be pounding on the president's door in the Oval Office saying, "God damn it, let me in! We gotta talk!" And once through the door, I would say, "Please, for fuck's sake, quit making my department run around chasing people who want to smoke pot. We don't have the resources for that kind of frivolity. We have inscrutable Chinese drug cartels and vicious Mexican drug lords to interdict, God damn it! And we don't have time to waste figuring out whether someone with cancer really needs to smoke the marijuanas." And by the way, an addict nation is a nation at risk. I think back to my youth reading Pearl S. Buck's The Good Earth. And her portrayal of opium dens. And how an addicted culture becomes a pushover for anybody who wants to come along and take control of their so-called civil society. Yeah, I did think about that. Frightening. So it's 12 minutes past the hour, and I have kept Thomas from over at FYI on hold for far too long. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. It's always a pleasure to hear you go off on something that is very near and dear to my, ironically, considering this Wednesday, my heart. I have been taking off my ADHD medication. So I have been functioning less than usual because the ADHD medication that I take is a stimulant.
Right.
They're okay. My psychiatrist, who's only known me less than 6 months, since about February, but we've only seen each other three times, she's okay giving me all my depressants that make me exhausted on top of the heart failure that I have, as the Yale doctors classify it. But she refuses because it's a stimulant and it hasn't caused any harm that they can tell. And the doctors previous didn't take me off it when they initially found my issue. She took me off it as soon as she found out about the catheterization and gave me something that's absolute crap. So.
Oh, you mean a fidget spinner? I mean, we can just take you off your ADD meds and give you a fidget spinner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And instead, my aunt, I call her my aunt, but she's really my cousin because she's my mother's cousin. But out of respect in our family, that's what we do.
Yeah, auntie.
And she's Aunt Madeline, and she just got out of the hospital. And apparently, according to my mother, we're equally as tired. And I shouldn't be. I'm as unquote-unquote healthy as I am with all my stuff going on, I shouldn't be. Because what I should have is the ADHD medicine that was...
Well, I mean, Thomas, can't you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps?
Oh, yeah, I can.
I mean, Mike Pence says you should be perfectly happy to take personal responsibility for the fact that you've got a problem heart and ADHD. I mean,
yeah.
Because you wouldn't if you loved Jesus enough.
Well, I loved him on Sunday. We had a nice little talk.
Well, you know, I saw your photograph. You clean up, you dress up real nice.
I know, right? That's a scary-ass thing, ain't it? I look like a Republican, a little young one, too. Oh, but that being said...
Don't make me have your mama wash your mouth out with Octagon soap.
She would, too, especially hearing that. Oh, she still can't figure out how I ended up on. Considering my godmother was a Chicago Union teacher in the middle of the inner city of Chicago. So talk about Republican fighting liberal arguments that we used to have. That's why I think I'm such a good democratic socialist now, thanks to her. But that being said... I can't function properly without this medication. I have no side effects. I can function, but I've noticed because I'm already tired because of the medication, and I'm tired because of the heart problem. What the ADHD would do would kind of offset it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'd also get the beautiful, clear-headedness, your mind isn't racing portion of that as well. And when I would actually go to sleep, it would be real sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I can't imagine having to live with what you have to live with, because on those evenings when, say, it's been especially stressful and I lay down to go to sleep, and, you know, your mind just won't turn off and let you.
Yes.
And so you spend 4, 6, whatever hours in the bed wondering. Have you ever gone to sleep and wondered if you were asleep?
Oh, You know what? I do that every night.
I have one of those, and I'm shot for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. And I can't afford to be. You know, I can't afford this. And the kicker of all this, I'm also going for disability because, you know, I'm a freeloader. I got to be a full-on freeloader, Bob. And this wonderful...
Well, you're going to have to start drinking so people can accuse you of getting the drunk check.
Amen to that. We have a full bar down in my basement where I can, you know, do all the hacking and the leaking for Donald Trump. It's White House, and because, you know, it's on some guy in the basement that's doing it.
Yeah, but you haven't made it to 400 pounds yet. He says you have to be 400 pounds.
That's true, but about four of me in a mirror and a camera were there.
Yep, well, exactly.
See?
And you know, maybe you could reach out and try to get some funding from for FYI, from a Russian oligarch or a skeevy Russian website that promotes stories like Pope Francis endorses Donald Trump. I mean, and then you could buy some platinum coverage because up in Connecticut, I'm sure that, you know, they've got all we can get around here is bronze. But
are you trying to accuse me of being Jill Stein because I almost supported her for about 5 seconds?
No. It's just that there are some progressive radio shows out there now that are fully funded by skeevy Russian billionaires and dodgy Russian websites.
Yeah. And it's, you know, people that I respect to a point, and then it's like, really? You couldn't do this on your own? You couldn't find I know you got the listeners more than, you know, FYI Nation and maybe the Horn combined.
And multiplied by a gajillion, right, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Add 12, but, carry 5, come up with 62,000, never mind.
My favorite shrink, I asked her, I got all my SSI information in the mail. They sent another book after my appointment. Because I'm not doing a lawyer. I'm doing it the old-fashioned way where you go to the office, and I actually had a really nice, didn't look down at you person, and we talked about me losing my dog and having to put her down and what that was like, and it was actually a pleasant thing to deal with. And then I got the paperwork, and I sent it to my psychiatrist, and she said, I need to know you for 6 months before I can write something for you about what your symptoms are.
What, do we have to have a candlelit dinner?
Yeah, right? And then she said, the kicker to this was, why don't you consult with your medical team? And my thought was, and I like this woman, too.
I mean, what, are we going to have a huddle?
Right? I like this woman, too. And my thought was, bitch, you are my medical team. I have my therapist that I got to do talk therapy with every week on Monday. And then I see her, the shrink who prescribes the medication, which she was okay with doing, with me just telling her what I was taking from before. Knowing my conditions and everything else. Until I actually had an appointment. She was okay doing it when I had the MRI.
Right.
You know? But you say calf and groin and whoop, there you go. I need a cardiologist sign off on this.
Well, so have you engaged in the existential horror yet, Thomas, of trying to figure out what happens to your ability to go to the doctor? If the Republicans get their way?
I am probably going to use my old business that I had signed over to my boss man, Steven, to purchase both medical care. is what we're going to have to do through the business. And Lord only knows what that's going to cost. It'll probably eat up whatever little tiny chunks of money we have left, which scares the hell out of me. I'm only hoping that I'm in a blue state right now where...
And that it stays that way.
Well, it's pretty blue for the most part. We've had our John Roland, and then he went to prison. So we like putting Republicans in prison. Lil Weicker went to prison. Even the independent ones. We still like, you know, putting them behind bars. So I think we're going to stay that way for a little bit longer than, at least until they tell me what's going on. But I'm scared, Bob. I'm more scared about losing the coverage I have than actually going through this procedure in 48 hours.
Well, everybody will be holding you in their thoughts.
Well, I appreciate that, but what I want more.
I know that's cold comfort.
It's not that. What I want more is all the people who are worse off than me and can't get the treatment, like you were talking about. Those are the ones who need to be thought of. Those people, because
thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. I'm lucky I have my parents who are in fairly good health, aside from my mom's cataracts, but she can afford to get the operations because she works for my aunt, my cousin, who just got home from the hospital and is as equally as tired as I am. And she had worse off stuff, and she's 80. But they can afford to help me. I'm worried about my friends like you and Nicole Sandler and anybody else who can't, you know, get that Sputnik contribution or that RT contribution.
Right.
Irregardless if they own their own show. I know there's a lot more power in owning your own show than anything, but, you know, it's still kind of... gives you the heebie-jeebies, doesn't it, considering?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
You know? I mean, I've gone down...
Walk us through the reality of your Wednesday.
I'm going
to
be...
If it's not too horrifying to contemplate.
No, it's... I've done it before, so this is... The horrifying part is the fact that it's only an exploratory looky. It's a look-see. That's the horrifying part. It's not that it's actually being done. That's why I feel like there are worse off people, and I feel worried for them than me. And I worry about those who need help. But what my procedure is going to be is 7:30 a.m. I arrive at Yale New Haven. I check in, I do the pre-op and all that fun stuff, and then Bob, I will be in at 8:30 with the doctor who has seen me since I was 5 years old. He's treated me. I am that lucky. So I have full confidence in my cardiologist. I have full confidence in the hospital. I have no confidence in my government. That's where I'm at. And to protect and govern its citizenry. And that scares the hell out of me. And the procedure itself, not so much, because I'm going to be on some fancy drugs. So that'll be fun.
Well, don't come out of there all addicted to anything, okay?
Well, I wouldn't mind talking to Mr. Sessions for a little bit. He might like talking to some regular folk instead of a lawyer or to some Russians. You know, these days, that's what all he got to talk to is lawyers and Russians and Donald Trump.
Yeah, I know.
you know. But I don't want to let anybody down on this, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm Debbie Downer on this, because I've been through this since day one. So I it's either one thing or the other. My only hope in this is that, you know, I'm calling my doctor fondly, not in a mean way, unless I die, then it can be the mean way. I'm calling him Columbus tomorrow on Wednesday. And I just hope he finds India and not the Caribbean. I want him to find the easiest route out of this. Because the hardest route is a heart transplant or death. Those two scare me more because of what everybody else will have to go through with me.
God almighty.
I really want to thank you.
Yeah, and see, that's as if that's not enough of a challenge to sweat, you know, to sweat the coverage for that kind of thing, as you said. Yeah, what a boost to the healing process.
Yeah. No, indeed. And I don't want anybody to... I wouldn't wish this on anybody, the stress of it. And I know a lot of my mistakes are stress-related, too, so I'm not blaming at all on not having the drug. But I'll tell you one damn thing. I was making way less mistakes when I was on it. And I was able to have a lot more coherent thoughts than I had ever been, and I have people who will tell you that, as opposed to now. And these past 2 weeks since she's taken me off that drug, I have two doctors that I'm getting rid of when this is all done. She's one of them.
Can't blame you. So what's your recovery time?
It's outpatient. Unless they find, you know, unless they hit the Caribbean, it's outpatient. I'll be back by Thursday.
So they just pull the cath out, slap a piece of bubble gum on your inner thigh, and to home you go.
Yep. But I'll be walking down the stairs to my basement little hermit habitat. That's the word I was looking for. And the fun part will be that. Maybe I'll just get a sled and slide down them. Because if I have the door open, I'll just hit my bed and then that'll be fine and I'll take a nap. So maybe I'll just do it that way for Thursday. Well, Wednesday night. I mean, it's literally, Bob, it's literally they're going in to see what the hell's going on because they have no explanation for it. That's the scariest part of it.
And hopefully you come out of it with an explanation that makes some sort of sense and doesn't involve terror.
Yeah. And if it does, I will say I have some wonderful people like you on my corner and, you know, some of the best people like Lou Hastings and Leslie Tyler that I've met through this network and through your you know, Scott, who's my chat moderator, ET. You know, I met some amazing people through this network, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And they kept me going through all this. And I can't thank you all enough. And I'm turning Southern. What is that?
Yeah, that was a y'all that just snuck past you.
Know, right? That doesn't normally happen. I don't know. But I do want to thank you. And, I got to meet my girlfriend through this network. So going on 2 years now. So who would have thought of that? So I got to get two more out of that and then two more and go from there.
There we go. Well, Thomas, thank you for the call. And, hey, thank you for being the first person to jump in on the fundraising this evening. I appreciate
Indeed.
That.
Everybody else needs to as well, because we need to keep you around as much as progressive radio, real progressive radio, as we can.
Well, you know, I mean, I'd like to keep doing this. I mean, you know, month after month, we've been doing this, and well, I just, nobody's given me a call from, the skeevy Russian website, or I haven't got any calls from skeevy Russian billionaires. I'd much rather take George Soros's money, but you know what the hell? The phone ain't ringing, so we'll just keep plugging away at the $200 a night.
And you must be doing something right. Left.
Yeah.
You have a good night, Bob, and thank you so much for letting me on.
Oh, Thomas, you take care. Be well. We'll be thinking about you. Okay.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Thomas, FYINation.com. I don't know how to follow up after something like that. Yeah, whatever fears and misgivings and can't compare. Yeah, I know. He's going to cash them Sputnik money checks irregardless of what Commie Bob has to say about it. I know. So, and I neglected to mention at the beginning of the program, because I was kind of getting used to the new sound in my own head, which I'm not entirely okay with yet, that there's much tweaking yet to do. I just have to finesse the system back into figuring out where the thing that I tweak is. It's one of those downsides to Windows 10. It's just not so easy to find these things. I do. I have something just tells me it's a sample rate. But I neglected to mention at the beginning of the program that, you know, we closed the program with a deficit on Friday. And thanks to a number of people, an anonymous person, Catherine, our overnight crew of subscribers, we managed to, we're even heading downhill to Friday. So that's why the fundraising goal was $200, and now it's $195. So, thank you, Thomas and FYI Nation. We've got an hour and 25 minutes to not have a $195 fundraising hole at this point in the month, and fundraising deficits going downhill toward the end of the month always kind of creep me out. Let's check in on some email. Subject line: these rat fuckers. I know you're already well aware of the pitfalls of our current Hunger Games healthcare system. Here's what really gets me about these Republican rat fuckers. They actually believe this Darwinian bullshit. I get it in theory. Only the strong survive in the wild, thus making a species stronger and weeding out defective genes and passing on those genes that help an animal thrive. That's all well and good if we were on the wild plains fighting off lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. Oh my. However, that's not where we are. We have evolved. Just because these white men were born on third base in a game that's ruled and officiated by other rich white fucks doesn't mean they are superior in their will to survive. It just means they're lucky. Here's the weird thing about luck. At some point, it runs out. I just hope I live long enough to see these jackwagons fall from grace and the rest of us can get on with the business of taking care of each other. Matt in San Francisco. It's not that they're interfering with our ability to be okay. It's not that they're interfering with our ability to tend to ourselves. It's our ability to take care of each other that they're screwing with, that they most hate. Because they do subscribe to a social Darwinist approach, and they do believe in the mad bullshit notion of pulling oneself up by one's own bootstraps and the lone wolf. Funny, we worry about lone wolves when we talk about terrorism, but if you ask a Republican economist about lone wolves, well, we're all lone wolves. We're all personally responsible. That line about personal responsibility from Mike Pencilneck Geek particularly galled me because, of course, he professes to be a Christian. And that personal responsibility horse shit is nothing that his savior ever taught. There's nothing in Matthew 25 about the naked being personally responsible for clothing themselves. Nothing in Matthew 25 about the homeless being responsible for putting a roof over their own heads. It's an acknowledgement that people fall on hard times, the luck runs out, and that the only way we survive is if we take care of each other. But the Republican Jesus that Mike Pencilneck Geek and the rest of the evangelicals worship, you know, he just wasn't thinking about none of that stuff when he was up there being nailed right in. No. Mark, with an email, starting in condolences and a poem for you. And by the way, I neglected to mention that the fella who died over the weekend, was among the first to start organizing water deliveries when the Freedom disaster befell West Virginia a couple of 3 years back. When poison, corporate poison, free market poison, unregulated poison began flowing out of people's taps. He was one of the ones who said, "This is intolerable." And gathered together with other people of like mind and started delivering however they could in the backs of rusty old pickup trucks, in the backs of rattly old Subarus, whatever would get to a place. They loaded up. They were driving hundreds of miles to get water because water was scarce. And driving it into communities and passing it out. Pretty sure he didn't have health care. Pretty sure. And damn, that young man could... Well, young man, 37. That man could play guitar. He and I were not always on the same page. But he... politically. But he got... He got the basic human need for help when help was called for. Mark writes, starting in 1995, I had the great privilege of singing with the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles for a few years. The very first concert in which I sang was the memorial for the poet Paul Monette. We sang a piece, All There Is Love, which was excerpted from the introduction to Monette's Elegies for Raj, set to music by Roger Borland. Monette was one of the strongest poetic voices of the AIDS decimation among the gay community. To this day, His poetry and prose touches me in a way that I still cannot understand, though these many years have passed since I was on those particular front lines. I give you what for me are the words to which I go when despairing of those fallen in fight, all of our fights, the great and the quiet, the known and unknown, the addicted and the sober, all of us warriors. Paul Monet wrote, "The story that endlessly eludes the press is the death of a generation of gay men. Amen." We are talking about one man's passing and one man's cry, a warrior burying a warrior. May it fuel the fire with them. We will not be bowed down or erased by this. I learned too well what it means to be a people. Learned in the joy of my best friend what all the meaningless pain and horror cannot take away. That all there is love. Pity us not. Pity us not. All there is love. And Mark reminds us it's not a solution, but a reminder. And you know, for the evangelicals like Mike Pence, Soul Neck Geek, they can even go in their own holy book to the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians and find Saul Paul writing, "If I have not love, I am as sounding brass." Well, I am double dip damned if I can find the love in kicking 22 million people off of health care. Where's the love in that? It's nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. Steve in New York says, "I wish the right-wingers actually had to live under the government they want." No, Steve, that's for us. That's for us, not them. Subject line, "Dope fiends and working bums and chain gangs, too." Sounds like workfare for drug addicts, Bob. Years ago, back in those dirty 80s, they used to make people work a few hours for their general assistance benefits. The workfare nonsense is nothing new. Clipping hedges in the park, picking up trash on the beach at Santa Monica. Not bad at all, but only a few hours at minimum wage for a $300 check. Like we used to say to each other, too bad they won't give us a regular county job at full pay for doing the parks department's work. One way or the other, a miserly government always takes the moral way out. Oh, yeah. And signed, Steve, in China. You can count on that. If there are some poor people to be righteously fucked, the people doing the insertion, no lubricant required. Because, of course, that would be costly. No, the people doing the effing can be counted on to find a moral argument to support the harm they do. But there's the number. The Congressional Budget Office has released its analysis of the McConnell plan. $22 million. Well, gosh, that's $1 million less than 23, isn't it? 22 million more people. will lose their health insurance under the Better Care Reconciliation Act. Getting reconciled to not having better care than under the Affordable Care Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. The number of uninsured largely comes as a result of the vicious cuts to Medicaid. By 2026, under Mitch McConnell's plan, 15 million people will lose Medicaid coverage. The way it breaks out, 2018, 15 million people will be more 15 million more people will be uninsured. That goes to 19 million in 2020, 22 million by 2026. And hey, a whole bunch of those folks are going to be old people. So I guess that's okay. Because what are old people doing for the economy anyway? They need to get out of the way. Here's a few other little tidbits from the CBO report. $321 billion. The federal deficit will go down by that much by 2026. Because of the Medicaid cuts and the fact that the subsidies for other coverage are going to be slashed. On the other hand, repealing the Affordable Care Act taxes increased the deficit. I'm sure they'll try to sell this in 2020. The average premium for a benchmark plan for a single individual is going to be 30% less than it is now. Here's the rub. There's going to be a lot of stuff those plans won't cover. You know, stuff like, mental health. Or pregnancy. God knows, not abortion. Damn sure, not any sort of contraception. And addiction treatment? We can just forget about that. Because, you know, who needs... I mean, really, can a recovering addict ever... do much? Can a recovering addict ever really contribute to the economic engine of capitalism? And isn't that the real measure of worth in this country? Story coming from Steve in Georgistan. The opioid addiction crisis hits home for me. My childhood best friend. And so many of these stories start the same way. My childhood best friend hurt his back assisting on unloading one of his hauls. He didn't have to do that. It was just the kind of guy he was. He was helping unload a truck full of appliances when a fridge fell backward on him and smashed his back. He went through grueling after grueling back surgery. Nothing worked. Back surgery so seldom does. The only thing that worked were the pain meds. And the bastards cut him off. He had no other recourse but to go to the streets to seek relief. Long story short, he ended up draining his mom's 401k portfolio. He hit up his brother, his family, and then started on his friends for money. He hit me up time and again, and I could not say no. I wired him money. Looking back, I'm not sure I did the right thing, but you could hear the pain in his voice. I'm pretty sure you did the right thing, Steve. Wrote him a letter telling him to find a legitimate pain management clinic. But by then, he was so caught up in the judicial system, a pain management clinic wouldn't touch him. They found him dead in some godforsaken bathroom in some godforsaken halfway house, penniless. He had the note I had written him in his pocket when they found him. I have to live with that. Signed, Steve. And, you know, there are tens of thousands of those stories. And, of course, it gets so much coverage now because it's happening to a population group that, gosh, those things are just not supposed to happen to. And here's one of the more, so here's one aspect of the, of the McConnell social Darwinism experiment. They've tinkered with the draft bill a little bit now. They put a continuous coverage provision into it. What does that mean? That means that if you have had a 63-day gap in coverage, then you're locked out from enrolling in the individual insurance market for 6 months. Well, now it's all better. Over at the Kaiser Family Foundation, the Senior Vice President Larry Leavitt went on Twitter to say that those provision delays apply to both healthy and sick people. And he noted that the likely biggest effect of a six-month waiting period will be to prevent some sick people from getting care immediately after signing up. You know what sick people who can't get coverage immediately after they sign up don't do? They don't go to the doctor. They don't go and get desperately needed treatment. You know what else they do sometimes? They die. And the number of dead, the number of people whose death warrant Senator Mitch McConnell wants to sign is somewhere in the north of 10,000 human beings range. 22 million uninsured. Out of that, 10,000 people, fuck 'em, will die. Now, I saw some dude on Twitter over the weekend, and I couldn't. It's Twitter, for God's sake. You know, probably just better off not even participating. I heard some guy decrying the tone of people who are saying that the Republican plan will kill people. I mean, it's not a joke. It's not something said for effect. It is not speculation. It is a goddamn fact that it will kill people. I mean, people are just going to die because of actions being taken by good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals like Mitch McConnell. Or John Cornyn. Or, Lamar Alexander. Or Roy Blunt. Okay? The things they did. And you really can't attenuate away from it. This is a direct link. What they're doing is going to kill somebody. It's just that the somebody it's going to kill doesn't know that they're the one being killed. Hell, it could be me. It could be you. It could be some member of the Horn Family Community Congregation that's one of that group of elect who gets to go and meet their maker a little bit early. Because conservatism, because family values. Now I'm trying to find here the tone guy. It was really pretty disgusting. Oh, here we go. Evan Siegfried. And he quotes Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Hillary tweeted, oh, I know, I don't have time for the reverb right now. Hillary tweeted, forget death panels. If Republicans pass this bill, they're the death party. And she was commenting on a report from the Center for American Progress and Harvard researchers. The Senate bill could result in 18 to 28,000 deaths by 2026. Bernie, on the other hand, said, oh, wait a minute, Bernie and Hillary almost in agreement? But I thought they were so different. Bernie said, let us be clear, and this is not trying to be overly dramatic, thousands of people will die if the Republican health care becomes law. Both statements, the one by Hillary and the one by Bernie, are 100% factually correct and true. This, however, did not sit well with Evan Siegfried, who bills himself as putting commentary in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Daily Beast, Business Insider, Wine Magazine, and he's a Wine and Larry David enthusiast. And he's got a photo showing him putting his good side, showing his good side and looking off into the intermediate distance. And I guess he'd been on some TV program. And then he tweeted, quoting Hillary and Bernie, this type of language doesn't increase civility, but furthers divide. It's possible to oppose the bad bill without using such a caustic tone. Holy fuck. If you heard a guy saying something like that in a bar, would you call him outside? No, I'm not advocating violence. Or would you just look at him and, what in the ever-loving fuck are you drinking? When a person is going to goddamn die because of something that Republicans do, and there's a direct connection between what they do and the death, that is not a matter of caustic tone. That's reality. Not tone. Yeah. But mercy sakes, we must watch our tone, lest we
lest we give a case of the vapors to poor Mitch McConnell. Yes.
John, who just took us down to only $95 to go for the evening. Thank you, John. That's big. Can we get 10 more people at 10 bucks? I know. It would make us like $5 over. But could we get 10 more people at 10 bucks or something like that in the next, 57 minutes? John says, if this bill was so good, why are most of the hits coming after presidential elections in 2020? Ta-da! Well, because that way, that's two more terms in which the Republicans can hang on to their majority and consolidate their power further. Shit, after the 2020 census, we'll be lucky if anybody but the Trump family can vote. But I take your point well, John. GK, meanwhile, says, the Turtle et al. Plan. Hey, Bob, color me stupid, but it is my opinion that these filthy GOP bills are the pig lickings answer to population growth. Sad thing is, there's loads of dumb shits willing to go along with dear leader. Sad. There's a eugenic quality to it. Just like there's a genocidal quality to the opioid problem. I was reminded when I got the news yesterday that it seems like there's always an experiment going on, a genocidal experiment going on in Appalachia to see, we wouldn't want anybody to really notice we were doing this, but if we depopulate at central Appalachia, we can blast the fuck all out of it and nobody need be the wiser. Oh, and one other thing I noticed, because I was traveling yesterday and today, I noticed two places along the highway, the same highway, about 50 miles apart, where they're stockpiling pipe. And I don't mean like, quarter inch, half inch, three quarter inch. This is some big ass pipe. I'm pretty sure they're not getting ready to turn US 19 into an 8-lane superhighway. Four lanes seem to be handling it quite nicely. And I also confess I don't necessarily know what natural gas pipeline looks like. But if I was going to guess at what natural gas pipeline looks like, I'd say it looks like that shit they're stockpiling at two separate locations about 40 miles apart along US 19 in Nicholas and Raleigh counties. Lucky for the pipeline company, there aren't any rambunctious indigenous people to raise a stink about it. I mean, it's just West Virginia, right? I mean, we've been tearing the living shit out of this place for as long as white folks have been here. Ron in Raleigh says, didn't Yeshua say, get your own damn loaves and fishes, get some personal responsibility. Better than that, get a goddamn fishing pole, maybe a net. What, you guys don't know how to make nets? Screw you then. Go hungry. Yep, Jesus said all of that. Thank you very kindly to Will in Chicago. That's 85 bucks we've got to go now. Down to 85. Thank you, Sandra. That's 35 to go. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, this could actually happen in the next 54 minutes or so. I suspect over on the Skype line we have Jim. Is that you, Jim?
It is.
How are you?
I'm here. How are you, sir?
You're there. I'm here. So we're here.
Sometimes I wonder about Gertrude Stein, if so there, there. But I don't know.
Sometimes I'm the king of no there, there.
There you go. You know, going back to this thing about if this Republican health bill was so good, it reminds me of what Stalin said about NATO. Well, if this thing is so great, why can't I join it?
Or, given the fact that none of these things that they're doing are going to affect the health care of any member of the government of the United States, it reminds me of Groucho Marx saying that he would not be a member of any country club that would allow him to join.
Oh, my Lord, Groucho. You know, these, what do you mean it's not going to affect any of the Congress or the White House or the
Supreme
Court?
Oh, hell no, it's just for the proles. Hey, Jim, can you turn down the speaker there behind you?
I'm very sorry. I just got a new pair today, and I was just testing out. Just one second.
That's okay.
Thank you, sir.
They work very well.
For $20, you can't beat them.
No, they sounded nice and clear. In fact, I think I sounded better on your speakers than I do in my own headphones right now. I have some audio work to do.
Well, I've heard you 5x5 ever since the beginning of your program, but I'm just glad I picked them up. And as a matter of fact, I did pick up a new piece of old laptop for Christmas. And I haven't even opened it until today, so I got it programmed and speakers, and it's just working fine. I'm glad to have it because I put this in my bedroom.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's basically, I have to kind of get a bit earlier now than I used to. I can't stay up too late watching all this, that, and the other. So Rufus and I are just sort of good bedfellows.
Well, Rufus is good company.
He is. He's better company than most of the crap I see on television today, particularly Mitch McConnell and that Shelley Moore Capito or whatever her name is.
Arch in a bad wig.
You know, I would love to see those two combine forever to have to French kiss each other.
Now, damn it, we went through this 20 years ago with the Supreme Court. Supreme Court, Jim, said, I can't tell you what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it, and I know it when I hear it, and I'll thank you not to get all obscene on my radio, because that's just disgusting, and I think I've been put off my kibble for a couple of days.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just thinking about her slipping in the tongue. I mean, you know.
Oh, sure. Tonsil wrestling. Yeah, you bet. No.
You got it. Tonsil tennis. But, you know, they have these ads on TV constantly about Shittable Captain. What are you going to do? What are you going to say? How are you going to vote? This, that, and the other. They have all these real heart-wrenching ads on TV. And I just wanted, and she says that she's undecided.
She's watching the situation develop. Of course, this is also a woman who laughed about the freedom disaster, Jim.
I know. It's kind of like Captain Smith saying, well, I'm going to watch this situation develop after the ship hit an iceberg. But, you know, what kind of woman is this? And I just wonder, if she votes against this, I mean, for it, and I don't think it's going to pass, Bob. I hope it doesn't, but I don't think it will.
Well, I'm just paranoid. I don't know if you were listening Friday or not, but I'm just paranoid enough to wonder if there wouldn't be a whole lot of people who would be a whole lot of happy, and by that I mean Republicans, who'd be a whole lot of happy if this thing didn't pass.
I'm sure they would be, because this could have really paint them on a very bad brush in this state and many other states as well. Because, you know, all these governors are coming out saying, you know, good Lord in heaven, what is this going to do to the budgets of our state? I mean, you know, John Kasich may have voted for it back when he was in the House, but now, he's thinking a whole different tune, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a different story when you actually have to manage a state budget.
Exactly.
And now... Even the block grant aspect is not enough to seduce some Republican governors, because ordinarily if Republicans in Congress say block grant, Republican governors say gimme.
Oh yeah, they use it for anything they want to.
Right.
Those funds, those pots of money are not earmarked for anything. They can be used in any way they deem appropriate. Appropriate in quotation marks.
But with all the slashes, they don't want the block grants. because they still have a federal requirement to provide some level of coverage via Medicaid, and this doesn't meet the level of coverage.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't meet any kind of level whatsoever. And, you know, let them go ahead with their so-called Trump plan or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I'm just hoping that this may be their ultimate denouement, because if they don't get this thing passed, I doubt seriously if they're going to get the tax thing passed, and then they're going to probably try to shut down the government as long as it is some type of effort to get something through. And, you know, I think it's going to hurt them badly at 18.
Can we go through a couple of things? Because you just said something that I've been meaning to touch on, and I haven't, and I think we should. But first of all, if they don't pass it, let's remember, if they don't get this passed, if this thing dies in the Senate, then that means the Democrats lose their signature issue for campaigning in 2018, which would suit every Republican in the Congress just fine.
Mm-hmm.
That means they don't have to go home and have people asking them how they're going to get their chemo, or how Grandpa's going to get his nursing home rent paid for. And so they, well, you know, it's dead. We're just going to have to live with Obamacare, I guess. God damn it. And so that'll be done. But you mentioned this idea of, and I hear it all the time in the for-profit media, you know, they want to get down to work on tax reform. Jim, I haven't seen any billionaires with their little noses pressed up against the window pane, staring inside at the proles eating king crab legs while the billionaires go begging. What is this what is it about the tax code that so desperately needs to be reformed?
Nothing, actually. As a matter of fact, there's a lot to do as far as they're concerned. And as far, by that I mean they need to be paying a hell of a lot more than they certainly are, because they've gotten away with too much as it is already. And they're forcing the burden of taxes on middle-class and lower-class people. And people can ill afford to pay these taxes when they certainly can. Because, you know, to these people, if they've got $10,000 in their wallet, that's just pocket money to them.
Well, exactly. So aren't we saying, when they keep saying, well, you know, we've got to move on to tax reform, aren't they saying, We want to pay less taxes?
Yeah, but Bob, look at the tax codes and how they're written. I mean, it takes, if you really want to go into the tax codes and find out exactly who gets what, this and the other, you're going to have to pay somebody who's going to charge you $400 an hour to really get into the meat and the gristle of that thing. Because they have so many loopholes and so many, you know, so much legerdemain that they can basically make it come out anyway in their, on their side.
Well, the tax code is written by rich people for rich people. I mean, that's why, going all the way back to the tax reform of 1986.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. 85, 86.
And remember, you know, like Chris Matthews will get all dewy and misty-eyed and get that faraway look and talk about when Tipper and Tip and Ronnie took off their coats and rolled up their shirt sleeves and agreed that even though one was a Democrat and one was a Republican, or one was a Capulet and one was a Montague, or what the ever, that they got down to work and got tax reform taken care of. Well, it was that, am I mistaken, wasn't it the tax reform, 1986, wasn't that when people...
They stripped all your benefits.
Wasn't that when working people lost the ability to write off the interest on their auto loans?
Yeah.
And their credit cards?
It stripped all that interest and everything like that, and, you know, you couldn't claim it. And it was one of the worst things that ever happened, you know, to the taxpaying public of this country. And yet, they will sit around and talk about Reagan and Tip O'Neill getting together Oh, that's just some type of
fairy tale. Every time I hear that crazy shit, I expect to hear the theme from A Summer Place crank up in the background.
Well, I guess so. But, I mean, these people look back to those days with such handsome nostalgia. When I remember, they weren't very handsome, and there wasn't a whole lot of nostalgia. Because a lot of people, the marvelous 80s, didn't do so damn well.
No, a lot of people lost their shirts. And, you know, my parents were up and fully functioning in the 80s and everything. That was about the time my dad was having his first, his only triple bypass. And, you know, oddly enough, they never got all dewy over the Great Depression.
I don't know
about other people who had parents from the same generation, but my parents never looked back on some golden age.
No, not really. I mean, if you were the Great Gatsby, or if you were Barbara Hutton, or somebody like that, or Doris Duke, I mean, it may have been, or Cole Porter, it may have been a golden age for you back in the 20s and the 30s, because these people weren't touched.
Well, hell, didn't Gatsby wind up floating face down in a swimming pool? Damn, I've ruined the book for a lot of people.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did, absolutely. But I'm just saying, you know, the Roaring Twenties and the 30s were pretty rough times for a lot of people. I mean, you see the Roaring Twenties being lionized by so much bathtub gin and flappers and this, that, and the other. Well, that's a fairly small minority. Maybe people in Hollywood were making money like that. I don't know. I guess some of them were. Like I say, it was a bad time for a lot of people. And the only thing pulled it out of us was, you know, the Second World War, in spite of all of Roosevelt's efforts to try to use the ABC agencies to try to at least create a stopgap.
By 1930, both of my grandfathers were 34 years old, and they were pretty different men, Jim. One grandfather had been, by 1930, ruined by Republican economic policies that destroyed his up-and-coming career as a shopkeeper and a postmaster and a sawmill operator. And, I mean, you know, back up, not far out the road from where I live now. And the other had seen himself just ground under the heel of a coal company. Because after the miners shot themselves in the foot by going to war with the federal government in support of the coal industry, they got crushed.
Oh yeah,
and union organization was dead, and they worked like animals and were paid poverty wages, and that's all during a time when there's no Social Security disability. There's no Social Security.
No.
There's no unemployment compensation. There's no workers' comp. You're screwed.
I think my dad told me back in 33 or 35 or something like that, he had gone, I believe it was maybe 32, I'm not sure. Anyway, he had just gotten $300 salary or whatever, and he put it in the bank, okay? He put it in the bank on Wednesday. On Thursday, the bank closed. He never saw it again.
Yeah.
No FDIC.
But I mention all of that, Jim, because what's the difference between that generation that looked back on that and said, "Sorry, you know, not gonna get all worked up about the gone golden days of no," and who are these people that look back on the Reagan 80s as if they were some long near forgotten time? When money was free for the eating.
Oh, people like Ivan Boesky and people in Wall Street and people who had a lot of money and didn't give a shit where it went because it knew more was coming, the very wealthy, and those people whom Reagan, you know, lionized. I mean, he himself said, I'll never forget it, if you don't make $100,000 a year, man, you're broke. Remember that?
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, next to we start bobbing and rushing in 5 minutes, those are the few things I remember what that asshole had to say.
And so, but because of that, we're going to, you know, I don't know how many times their principal economic theory of trickle-down economics has to be proven to be
false.
A fraud.
It's false. It's a fraud. I mean, you know, it was Leffer, trickle-down economics.
But it's an article of faith, Jim.
Even with George H.W. Bush, he called it voodoo economics, and he said it wasn't going to work. Even he said that. The rich people are not going to allow money to trickle down to the lower classes to improve their situations. They're going to keep every money they've got and take as much money as they can from anybody they can, and they don't give a damn. And they're going to hide it behind their $400 an hour lawyers and put it on offshore accounts and all this stuff. And they're going to just make off like bandits. They always do. They always have. And to have somebody like Donald Trump as president, you know, Bob, I really haven't talked to you since the election. This is the first program I've listened to since October, except just to call in. And if you would have told me a year ago today that Donald Trump would be the next president of the United States, I said, I hope you have lost your mind. But then again, we had a few conversations about him and that thing about women and the nasty things he said by grabbing them by you know what. And you told me, Jim, that's probably going to improve his image. And all these people are going to get up there. The ones who go to, like, cage fights and stuff like this and have all these T-shirts and say, I can't believe I hate the whole thing and all this kinds of stuff.
Oh, my God.
That's his bait. Huh?
Oh, yeah. And you know, after the Access Hollywood tape came out, Jim, you had women all over America buying T-shirts that say, Donald Trump can grab mine.
I can't believe that. I can't believe people will think so little of themselves.
Really? You can't, Jim? I mean,
we're
talking about Americans, Jim. We're not talking about people with a whole bunch of self-respect. I mean, anybody who voted for Donald Trump doesn't have much self-respect.
No, they couldn't. Not really. And when he gets through with them, they're going to see just how much respect they really have. If they have sense enough to realize that somebody is up there who's going to cut their own throats. I mean, I have never seen such an administration in my life. Have you? I mean, it's kind of like there's a monarchy up there. He's got this relative, that relative, this relative, that relative. And, you know, these constant tweets that he's, every day he's got something crazy ass to say. So does the fact that he's had to surround himself with a whole bunch of lawyers. And, you know, they're trying to tell him to shut his mouth. Well, I hope he just keeps on talking. Because eventually, people are going to eventually realize how stupid this man is. No, not stupid. He's very crafty. How dangerous he is.
Okay, so I'm not trying to be contentious, Jim. Do you really think people are going to wake up? I mean,
I think they're going to have to.
I mean, you know where you live, where I live, where... You really think West Virginia? No. 2020, there was, well, you know, it's going to take a while to bring coal industry back, but Trump done said he's going to do it, so I believe him because he's a truth teller, that Trump. He's going to make America great again, but he's just going to need a little more time.
Let me ask you one question. I don't know if you know this, and it's not a rhetorical question. It's an actual question. How many coal miners are there? How many thousands?
I can give you a number in West Virginia.
Okay.
There are maybe 10,000, less than.
Okay, 10,000?
And that's everybody. Oh. That's That's not just people underground or people at work. I mean, those are people in prep plants, people driving trucks.
Okay.
The guy at the Rippy Mart Deli who makes bologna sandwiches for the guys going in on their shift. I mean, that's all them coal jobs.
Well, okay, that's the people who are actually in the coal industry. I believe the number is 51,000.
That's maybe nationally, yeah.
Nationally, 51,000. But who's that asshole under Trump that says he just created 50,000 more coal jobs?
Yeah, what, Wilbur Ross? Or, no, Pruitt.
I don't know who did, but I mean, yeah. He said that. And I thought,
Scott Pruitt.
I don't know who did it, because, I mean, when it gets to the point that I hear stuff like that, you know, I just, it just goes, I flip the channel, go in one ear out the other. But, I mean, you know, they're a total of 50,000 nationally, and they've created 51,000 more. I wonder where they are and how they got that number.
Well, the way they got that number was by a complicated political process called lying.
Or the Wizard of Odds.
It's straight up lie. There's nothing that supports it. The actual number of new coal jobs nationally, okay, is around 1,000.
And yet they got 51,000 new high-paying coal jobs. That's what they said. And these people here will believe it. They just can't wait till that prosperity comes over the wall into their lap.
Right. And see, that's why I said by the 2020 campaign here in West Virginia, they'll say, well, you know, I mean, with them Democrats out there trying to stop him and talking about Russia and not cooperating and keeping and being obstructionist in the Congress, it's going to take a little while longer to make America great and build that big old beautiful solar wall that's going to be solar powered. He done told us about that. And that kind of thing does take time.
Isn't that a real hoot? A solar-powered border wall.
Yeah.
And I could just see, I don't know which way those planes are going to be facing, but I could just see the people on the other side of Mexico taking rocks and just throwing them at them and just having a bunch of fun with them, knocking them out. I mean, the stuff that is produced out of that man's mouth and his Confederates, it's I don't think Hans Christian Andersen could have written a better fairy tale.
I have to give you a cowbell for simply using the word Confederates, because that may be the best use of that word in several weeks. That was a perfect, perfect use of the word Confederates. Trump and his Confederates.
Confederacy of dunces. That's exactly what they are.
And, of course, his chief Confederate is, of course, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III.
Now, you wonder, how could that man be the Attorney General of this United States, considering his legal history of this, that, and the other? I mean, my God, he's just about, he may as well have Simon Legree up there with a whip as the overseer. And this thing about now is coming before the court about gay rights and stuff like that, and these people that don't have to sell to gay couples and stuff like that. Well, are they going to say, well, if that passes, well, I don't like you because you're black. I don't like you because you are a different color. I don't like you just because I don't like you, and I reserve my right not to bake your cake and do anything for you. I mean, what it's going back to, you know, I just thought, are they going to reinstitute the Jim Crow laws?
It's all on the table, isn't it?
I think so. I don't know if I'm making any sense to you or not, but it makes sense to me.
Well, I see they're already out there hooting and hollering. I got a press release earlier today. Colorado Baker to seek justice before Supreme Court. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court announced it will hear the case of Jack Phillips, a Colorado baker who declined to bake a cake for a gay wedding. Phillips declined the request because it conflicted with his religious values.
How did they rule? I haven't heard.
Well, no, they haven't ruled. They merely agreed.
October?
They'll be back first Monday in October.
Okay. Well, you can imagine if Justice Kennedy retires, which there's rumors he might do. I mean, he had some kind of party with his clerks and stuff like that. And, you know, now they're speculating that he has 1 year left on the court, which leaves Blondie in charge of who is going to be nominating the next.
That man has tried to craft a legacy over the course of 30 years, Jim, of not being anybody's lapdog, of not being consistently, you know, of being the swing vote, of being the person who would, you know, go the right way when the time, blah, blah, blah. If he retires before Donald Trump is out of office, then his legacy is one of being a collaborator and a capitulator.
Bobby's 80 years old. He's in reasonably good health, but I mean, you know, how much longer can he serve? I mean, 80 years, that's a long time.
Supreme Court's a life sentence, man.
Well, I know, but, you know, he just might want to spend the remainder of his days not being conflicted by all this stuff. And, you know, maybe he just wants to have his last days on earth not having to be able to go to that court and participate in these decisions that are coming up to him through the lower courts. I don't know. But, you know, eventually a railroad iron will wear out, and I think basically Justice Kennedy is probably getting into that shape where he's just getting tired of it. I can't blame the man. Could you, really?
No, but sometimes, look, Jim, he knew what he was getting. He knew it was a life appointment when he took the job.
But the thing is,
he was the replacement justice for, wasn't he the replacement justice when Bork's nomination failed?
I'm not sure. He may have been. But the thing about it is, even though it's a lifetime appointment, if he wishes to retire, there is no law that says he cannot retire and go into his merry way. That's the thing.
No, he absolutely can. But
he absolutely probably will.
But if he looks at Donald Trump and recognizes what Donald Trump is relative to the well-being of the nation, I don't see how anybody short of death could step off the court.
Well, I don't know. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has certainly lasted a long time.
And you know what? They will carry, and she's one of those people, they will carry Ruth Bader Ginsburg out feet first. Because she is not going to give, willingly, Donald Trump a chance to replace her seat with some jackbooted, goose-stepping asshole from the Federalist Society.
Well, I hope that Justice Kennedy is possessed of the same resolve. I really do. But I don't know. I mean, you know, every time they do something, the press gets this big hullabaloo. Well, he's had his clerks together for a party, and the bar's in the basement or whatever, and they run off with it, and they make you think he's going to announce his retirement in October, which is a traditional time when they generally do.
Well, what they were predicting today, though, Jim, was that he was going to announce his retirement from the bench today. And that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. I hope it does. I hope he does. I hope he does stay on, because he's one of the few justices we have who can stand up against Trump and, you know, be the crucial vote in that 5-4 or whatever it is. I mean, there's a lot, that's a lot of responsibility to hang on one person and then to put up with the backlash to be the side. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, you think about it and you think of the weight of the world that must be on his shoulder, for example, if he's the decided vote or the swing vote in that decision. And it's really awe-inspiring. It's almost like Atlas having the whole world on your shoulders. I'd be considering the rest of the other court.
Well, the bottom line is that Trump wants him gone.
Oh, yeah.
And McConnell wants him gone.
Okay, you definitely.
Because, see, you know, I mentioned Ruth Bader Ginsburg and losing a liberal seat, so-called. But the fact of the matter is, just losing the swing vote seat. Because, you know, there's another right-wing asshole that would let that would insist that a man freeze to death in the dark like Neil Gorsuch. Hell, they're a dime a dozen in this country.
Of course they are.
God Almighty, I don't know if you saw it or not, but the Senate held confirmation hearings for a Trump lower court nominee.
A nuclear regulatory person.
No, a lower court, a lifetime Article III judge. They held a confirmation hearing for that son of a bitch, and it turned out he had a history of writing writing pseudonymous blog posts that basically advanced so-called fake news about Barack Obama being a Kenyan Muslim and stuff like that, and that fucker's going to get advanced to the federal judiciary.
Which court?
Offhand, I can't tell you. But Al Franken absolutely blistered his ass
in
the confirmation hearing. But of course, it didn't make any real difference because because the committee voted along party lines and therefore the nomination advances.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, listen, my friend, I just saw the one up. They confirmed some guy who was in the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and that's a pretty important position to the government, let me tell you. And so I think his was like 70 the last time I saw the count, so he definitely got in it. And he was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, a Trump nominee for that position. So the Donald is getting all kinds of positions appointed, not necessarily they're that high up, but ones who will ascend to positions of, authority and pseudo-responsibility.
Exactly. And Rufus doesn't sound happy about it either.
No, he's not happy about it. As a matter of fact, he gets unhappy when I start talking to anybody else but him. But I just wanted to just say hello. And like I say, this is my first conversation with you since October. And it's really good. It's really nice to hear everything and hear some of the people talk that I'm familiar with. And so there.
Well, hopefully you'll keep listening and you'll hear some more of the familiars call in.
All right. You take care.
All right.
Have a good evening.
You as well, Jim. Bye now.
Good night, sir.
Our buddy Jim calling from not that awfully too terribly far away from here. It is about 20 minutes before the hour, and I have thanks to extend because we got where we needed to be. Thank you very kindly to Charlene. Thank you very much to Kay. It is much appreciated indeed. We finished fundraising for the evening, so we got money. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we do all that. We will nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian, and meet the monthly challenge, the monthly incentive. I had a number of times. The phone rang two or three times during the conversation with Jim. If you want back in, well, you got about 19 minutes, 18, 17 to do it in. Going back to the opioid issue, note coming in from Arnold. The medical community around here, and that would be Pennsylvania, is flipping the situation. Instead of pushing pain pills on everyone now, when you go in with a legitimate problem, they threaten you with 6 weeks of physical therapy minimum. I've never wanted pain management, but currently I'm dealing with some issues with my neck and low back and would like some. They offered me physical therapy, not helpful before they can write prescriptions for pain medication. So I'll continue taking nothing. It's just better. Yeah, I've been down. Hell, I had to go to 6 weeks of physical therapy before I could have back when I had coverage, before I could have an MRI of my neck to find out that I have two or three discs that are just, kind of not there anymore or falling apart or whatever. And those 6 weeks of physical therapy were like getting into a bar fight 3 days a week. It was terrible.
You know, you'd feel kind of okay, good, sort of, whatever, you know. And then a day later, yeah, you felt like you'd been, let's just come out, we'll settle this out in the alley, and got your ass beat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Jim and I got into the conversation about how many coal miners there are, Robert in Australia kindly noted, yeah, 55,000. It's amazing how much 55,000 people can do toward screwing up a country. Because they do. But, it, you know, coal heritage and all that stuff. And it was another day of not being able to run the cameras in the White House press briefing room. You ever wonder what would happen if the White House press corps actually stood together and said, you know, we're turning the cameras on, Sean. If you want to leave, leave. Would they then ban the White House press corps the next day, except for the compliant press from Newsmuck and Breitbart? Don't know. Oh, here's a little bit of fun. So if you've flown any time in the last, since 2001, you know how not enjoyable it is. That the whole taking off your shoes and your belt. And, I mean, that's why I wear suspenders when I fly. Because I look at them and say, you know, boys, you got to take off the belt. There ain't no rule about my suspenders. And if I take these things off, we're going to have a pants down situation. And you don't want that. But, so, you know, for years and years and years now, if you're taking a laptop with you on your trip, you got to take that out separately because they want to x-ray it separately in case it might be, a bomb. Well, they figured out something else that might be a bomb, too. No, I'm not kidding. At little, not very busy airports around the country, there's a pilot program being tested right now by the TSA. And if you're carrying paper goods or food onto the plane, you're not really supposed to carry food, but I got a good grilling once coming back from Wisconsin because I had a couple of pounds of, wild rice, maybe. And by the way, we haven't talked about that in a very long time. I finally received the wild rice. It's going out. It really, really is after all this time. But I had a couple of pounds of wild rice in my bag. And apparently wild rice sets off the, oh my God, this man's carrying half a bale of marijuana in his bag. And so we had to have a nice little chat about that. So now the TSA wants to make people remove all paper goods and books. Books. From their carry-on luggage, backpacks. Books. Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, John Kelly, according to the ACLU, said, we might and likely will make the policy nationwide. What we're doing now is working out the tactics, techniques, and procedures, if you will, in a few airports to find out exactly how to do that with the least amount of inconvenience to the traveler. Okay.
Our buddy the Angry Indian says, books. Hell, you saw this coming. Yep. But, of course, they have a perfectly natural, neutral rationale. What they're saying is that because of checked baggage fees going up with the airlines, people are trying to carry more and more stuff in their carry-on bags, and that makes it difficult for the TSA screeners to determine whether or not your copy of the Holy Bible is actually a holy bomb. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. And the remaining contents of the carry-on luggage, the TSA explains, can be better examined if they're not scanned in a bag with many other objects. In the ACLU post by Jay Stanley, he says, it's not clear to me whether books are also regarded as a special threat or whether they're hard for the TSA to distinguish from explosives. Book-shaped bombs. Because, I mean, you know, we've all seen the movies, you know, the first 50 pages of the book are like a book, and then the rest of it's all glued together, and it's hollowed out in the middle, and it's right. But as Jay Stanley points out, books raise very special privacy issues. And they are especially noted as being protected in terms of privacy of one's reading preferences in the U.S. through state laws and through Supreme Court decisions. And in fact, in the past, passengers have been singled out because of what they were carrying in the way of reading material. It was 2010 when a man was abusively interrogated, handcuffed, and detained for about 5 hours because he was carrying Arabic language flashcards and a book that criticized U.S. foreign policy. And then he also points out the TSA, DHS, automated targeting system, tracking information on international travelers. And in that system, there have been notations in permanent files about controversial books that were in their possession. No kidding. And as Robert in Australia points out, how long before you have to poop before you can get on the plane, just in case you have something, you know, up there? Oy. As Brother Deacon Asa, with his tongue planted firmly in his cheek, notes, they're right to take the books away, Bob. Books are dangerous. They can inform. Yeah. Hey, let's run over and check in with Will from Chicago. Hey, Will.
Hi, greetings from the sunny southern shores of Lake Michigan in northwest Indiana, the part of Indiana that desperately wishes that it had been annexed by Illinois. I will share something from the chat room, as we do need a laugh in this grim environment. A Barkway suggested, need a flash mob, do all book ticks on the same flight and show up in just underpants. I added to that, yes, after eating rice and beans and onions, could we possibly have the Trump administration somehow all book that flight, because we are in a situation that is ridiculous. The ACA is collapsing in part because of Marco Rubio. He of the unable to control himself with water plan had a rule that undercuts the funding of the ACA. Indiana, where I am, is giving up the Hoosier, the Anthem, and one other carrier. So I have to check on where my health coverage will be if I'm still out here and don't become more gainfully employed. I also have to call them anyways because I keep on getting calls of renewals and it's an out-of-state number. So I'll say, hey, I know you're leaving us, but is someone trying to scam me? It's just that in this environment, we have to be skeptical. As for the issue on books, I'm not surprised because I fear Mr. Orwell may have been a few years late. We now have a party. The party holds forth to a creed, but all it really cares about is power. And this power comes from a very small, wealthy donor class, and the goal of the politicians is to sustain themselves by pleasing this class with tax donations. If thousands die, well, if it's not a great concern. I mean, I'm hoping that people will stand up and stop these efforts. I think a lot of the Republicans are in the position of Susan Collins and the gentleman from Louisiana who are worried, I support this and my voters tear me down. Meanwhile, we have the Rand Paul faction, or as I like to say, the Ayn Rand Paul faction, although merging the two is a rather frightening image, who say the bill is not harsh enough. Excuse me. I have talked to people from Belgium, from Sweden, from Denmark, from Israel, and they view health care coverage as a right. Only here is it a privilege. And I am very worried about the impact on the opioid epidemic. My cousin Kevin, who you may have noticed I mentioned a few times in the chat, has been fighting cancer, is a recovering opioid addict. He has been very active in initiatives in the northern Chicago suburbs to try to get people into treatment. He's starting to become a drug counselor, but he was lucky in that he cleaned his act up well before the Trump administration came in. Now we are likely to see not only further deaths, but also a spike in crime. So I'm going to be crude and ask the senators in the Republican Party and their congressional members this. Do you really want to have more opioid deaths in your community and someone so desperate for cash to get a fix because there's no medical coverage that he or she decides the only way to get is to mug someone and use a crowbar? And what if that was your daughter who got hit with a crowbar? They have conserved their compassion only for their own selves. And in other areas and other states, I fear that the GOP would be classified as a criminal organization. Because, quite literally, if any organization on foreign soil declared it was going to kill 10,000 Americans, any American president would have to respond, and the GOP would be the first to say, go get them.
Yeah.
Instead,
I mean, 10,000 people is more than died on 9/11, right?
Approximately three times more. And here's the thing. We have a governing group that can't govern. I realize the Democratic Party has flaws as wide as the Mississippi River. But guess what? At least there are some ideology there, and there's battles. I think we need to return more to FDR Great Society mode. But here we are having, instead of over a year's worth of hearings, trying to rush everything in a week. Excuse me, that is not governance. That is what I would have expected from Rome in its decline or several 20th century regimes, whom I will not mention, save to say that Some of Trump's supporters greatly admire some of those said regimes. It's up to us to take a stand, because in the end we can't. So there's things we can do. I did one today. I put in a small donation to the horn, even though I'm weighing on the whole California licensure thing, where I'm playing email at a distance of 2,000 to see about one document. But guess what? In the long run, I am not too worried about myself. But I am taught by my faith and traditions and my values that I was raised with to treat others with respect and dignity. Love your neighbor as yourself. If these GOP people claim to be any sort of Christian, any sort of the follower of a wandering Jewish rabbi, they should remember this, but their policies don't. And this is hypocrisy. If you recall, the worst part of hell in Dante's Inferno was reserved for hypocrites, then the traitors. Honestly, I think they qualify as both. But unfortunately, tonight I don't see Mitch McConnell's head in Satan's mouth, as happened with Brutus and Judas Iscariot at the end of the Inferno.
No, it's hard to get a turtle's head in your mouth. Sorry.
Yes. Well. Actually, I was going to say, with Mitch McConnell, I will say that if this is about as uninspiring a team of quote unquote leaders as I have seen. I mean, and here's the thing: when I think of the great Republicans, Eisenhower, Theodore Roosevelt, even going down to Everett Dirksen, whom LBJ talked to and said about Nixon, it's treason, and Dirksen said it is. All of them would look at their party in horror. They've essentially become the John Birch Society writ large, with a sprinkling of moderates and
evangelical Christianity.
Well, please, they have embraced evangelical Christianity and wedded into Ayn Rand's doctrines, and the contradictions are so extreme. It's just that I think the model should be, I've got mine, screw you, drop dead. And that's essentially what the Senate is saying to the rest of us.
Exactly. Will, we got to get out of here, but let me thank you again for helping out. You're part of why we made it all the way to our goal this evening. Thank you very much.
I'll hopefully do more soon. And guys, let's remember, it's up to us, both in the horn and in the world.
Thank you, Will. Have a good evening. Our buddy Will calling from Chicago. Time to get out of here. Thanks again, everybody. You did it. So we're good for the evening. And maybe we'll even come down a couple of bucks tomorrow evening with the overnight crew. Kind of thin this time of the month, but still, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.